Well, we've entered 2026, which promises to be a massive year for football, with the biggest ever World Cup to come this summer. The Premier League looks like providing the perfect first half of the year with a chance of an epic title battle. Well, Arsenal have the advantage but face the defending champions this week, while Manchester City look to heap the pressure on 24 hours earlier. We've got it all covered on The Assist. Well, a happy new year and welcome along to The Assist in association with freesupertips.com, your home for daily football hackers and bet builders. I'm Warren Ashurst, and this week I'm joined by James Milton and Dan Charles to look ahead to the big midweek of Premier League fixtures. And don't forget, of course, that you can interact with us as well via the Racing Post YouTube channel to let us know your thoughts. Before we look at what looks to be a bumper midweek of Premier League action, we cannot go any further without discussing two big managerial departures over the last few days. We've seen Enzo Maresca and Ruben Amorim leave Chelsea and Manchester United respectively. Milts, we'll start with Ruben Amorim because it's more sort of fresh in our minds. We're recording this on Monday, and this is when he has been sacked by Manchester United. The timing, firstly, what do you make of it?
I mean, you feel like he's kind of been on the verge ever since he arrived at Old Trafford. So, you know, it's not a huge surprise. Having said that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were seeing, you know, pundits saying, you know, there are promising signs here. There are green shoots at Old Trafford. Mm-hmm. Finally, the system's working. I was never really that convinced. I mean, you know, you look at it, the Premier League points table, I think, since he arrived, I think it's only Wolves, West Ham and Tottenham who've picked up fewer points than United, obviously ignoring relegated teams. And you look back to the end of last season when he basically gave up on the league, all the eggs in the Europa League basket, and they lost that final in such disappointing fashion. And you know, I think probably something had to be done. But having said that, you know, the issues at Manchester United go far, far deeper than just whether Ruben Amorim could do anything in his first year in charge. You know, I think the player recruitment over you know the past decade, the managerial recruitment has just been shambolic, really. And you know, we're going to hear all the usual sound bites about this is Manchester United Football Club, but realistically, is this an attractive job for a top manager? You know, we're looking at the opening shows for the next permanent manager, and it you know, it doesn't look a great list, and I can understand why, really.
Yeah, and you look at the Ruben Amorim situation, Dan, over the last few weeks. I just wonder whether Manchester United have been considering this following the draw with Wolves at home, and obviously the draw at Leeds off the back of it further hampered their hopes of getting into the Champions League, or whether his comments recently about potentially leaving in 18 months' time has had more to do with it.
I think it's the comments. I mean, they've had lots of like shocking performances and results before, haven't they? I mean, you think back to the Grimsby one when he was sort of cowering in the dugout during the penalty shootout. That wasn't really a great look, was it? It's weird the way results go because of the players they've got missing at the Africa Cup of Nations. I was kind of expecting this spell to be tricky, and they got a great win, didn't they, against Newcastle that they weren't really expected to get. If you look at it points-wise, I reckon if they'd have drawn that game, got like a half-fought draw, beat Wolves as they're expected to, drawn at Leeds, who are in great form at the moment, it will probably still be there, and it's exactly the same points total over those three games without the players that we're mentioning. I think it's probably less to do results and more to do with, and we'll get into Maresca later, but I think once you start not being aligned with the owners or Jason Wilcox, who's involved in the transfers and the recruitment, I think you're on very stony ground, and it's almost like a blame game. The manager now is trying to shift the blame to saying, "Well, look, I need some more players. I need, you know, the squad isn't good enough." And as soon as you start saying that, the blame gets firmly put on the owners, and sure as eggs are eggs, the next thing the owners are going to do is get rid of the manager.
Of course, the next task is finding a new manager. And Milts, you know, already Enzo Maresca's been strongly linked with the role. It's kind of ironic, not only because he, of course, left Chelsea only a matter of days ago, but also because the rumours have it that he's been in talks with Manchester City about potentially long-term being a replacement for Pep Guardiola. I mean, is Enzo Maresca, in your mind, the best option for United?
I mean, you know, maybe he's found a nice house in Manchester and he doesn't mind which club he ends up at. But it just smacks of the kind of short-termism of the planning that we've seen at United for so long now. I mean, yeah, Maresca's available, but is he going to be the right man? Is he going to be a guy who's going to be there for five or six seasons and really, really kind of transform this squad? I don't think so, really. I think probably the best realistic option might be Oliver Glasner at Crystal Palace if United can tempt him away. You know, plays three at the back with far more success than Amorim managed. So there might be in the short term a kind of smooth transition. And again, you know, we've spoken about kind of comments about owners and Glasner. There seems to be a bit of friction there. He maybe doesn't feel like he's been supported as much as he should have been in the transfer market. Has he taken Palace as far as he can after that fantastic 2025? So he'd be one. But yeah, I mean, I think if I was a United fan seeing Maresca as the early favourite for the job, I wouldn't be too thrilled.
And Dan, I completely take Miltz's point about it being something of a poison chalice at the moment, really, at Old Trafford. Just the name, though, Manchester United will attract managers, but maybe not as much as it would have done, let's say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, this three at the back thing as well, I mean, is that more Amorim's, favoured the formation rather than the club itself? I mean, there's been talk that behind the scenes that he was being encouraged to move away from that and was reluctant to do so, and that also played a role in the reason that he was dismissed. So are they then going to go as good as while Glasner has deployed that system far, far more effectively, probably with players that are more suited to it at Crystal Palace when they've got a fully fit squad? Are United going to go down that route again? It could be a knee-jerk reaction. They just go in a completely different direction. There's been calls to play a back four for quite a while now. But whoever comes in, I think short-term, there could be a chance to improve the results quite quickly in the not-too-distant future. If you think that Fernandez's injury doesn't look like quite as bad as it was originally first thought, getting Diallo and Mbeumo back would make a huge difference. We saw their performances offensively were starting to click a little bit, you know, before those two went away to the AFCON. So it is a chance for someone to come in and I think they haven't got a grand plan. They're going to be looking short term. They're going to be thinking, as a big club, we need to try and somehow get into the Champions League. There's probably a race, you know, for two spots there if it goes down to fifth. Between four clubs, I'd say Newcastle, Liverpool, Chelsea and Man United are probably in it, battling for two spots. And that's what they're going to be thinking. Someone can come in short-term, hit the ground running. I don't think it'll be a grand long-term appointment at this stage. It'll be just getting out what they can for the rest of the season.
Let's talk just briefly before we go into the list of games this week about Enzo Maresca. Again, James, it seems a situation a little bit like we said with Amorim, where he said the wrong things at the wrong time, and ultimately it's led to the board saying we need to go down a different route.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, from the word go, pretty much Liam Rossini was targeted as his successor. And that again just looks like quite a strange appointment, doesn't it? It almost feels as though the Chelsea owners, you know that they don't really know that much about football. They're not really confident dealing with a kind of top class manager. I mean, they got rid of Thomas Tuchel pretty swiftly, didn't they? And bringing in Maresca, you know, just had that one season with Leicester in the Championship. And now looking at Liam Rossini, who's obviously kind of been kind of vaguely in the Chelsea system as manager of Strasbourg. Yeah, it looks like, you know, not quite yes men, but certainly kind of unproven managers at the start of their careers who maybe are not going to kick up so much of a fuss. And actually, you know, as it turned out, Maresca did kick up a bit of a fuss and he's paid the price.
The irony is that Liam Rossini, most people felt, was a bit harshly treated at Hull City and lost his job there maybe earlier than he probably should have been. He's been at Strasbourg, as James says, there for a couple of seasons, Dan. And there's a lot of talk that the idea is to bring in a young manager because there's a young base of players there. How do you see that going with Chelsea?
I think that's part of it. I think also, I think style of play as well. He's a very possession-based coach as well, which, you know, Chelsea seemed to want. You mentioned about how he was also sacked by Derby as well. I mean, I've got to say, pedigree-wise, I'm mystified as to how he suddenly you know, the right man for the Chelsea job, just in terms of the stature of the job and what he's got currently on his CV. Nothing against the guy, but Strasbourg, I think, have won 7, lost 7. They're a higher possession-based team, but they've got quite a decent squad with a lot of, you know, players from the Chelsea system that, you know, not quite good enough for Chelsea, but within the French league, they would be players that would be coveted by a lot of other French sides. So he's got a pretty good squad for the level there. I don't think he's done anything remarkable at the moment. Certainly, you know, based on this season's results, and like I said, his bodies of work at Hull and Derby. I don't see how they qualify him to go into the Chelsea job. I mean, James was reluctant to say it. I think it probably is more that, you know, that he is the kind of yes man, and that's what they're after. Someone not to kick up a fuss. Maybe Maresca was that man, but when he got that success, certainly at the Club World Cup, he kind of got a little bit more. You know, I'm in a position now where I can speak my mind more and maybe get this club to be pushed on a bit more, and the owners didn't seem to like that, so we're going back again to the yes man situation.
Yeah, revolving doors, and it could be that one manager goes out and another one comes straight in terms of Maresca and Manchester United. We'll keep a close eye on that, of course, over the coming weeks. It is that time of year where you're not sure what day it is, what date it is, but we have got another week of Premier League action to look forward to in midweek. And it's time to look ahead now to the action with the games as ever in priority. And we start off at 8 p.m. on Thursday, where the league leaders Arsenal will look to extend their advantage as they face defending champions Liverpool at the Emirates. We'll get the latest prices for you in a moment. James, we'll start with you with this one. Couldn't have gone any better for Arsenal over the last week, surely?
No, it's been very, very good. And I think, you know, they came through that sticky patch, didn't they, after the defeat at Villa, where actually I think they played pretty well at Villa and got done right at the death. They had, you know, they were poor against Wolves, pretty poor against Everton, needed a penalty, you know, struggled to close out the game against Brighton. But I think those three tight wins really helped them. And then obviously they weathered an early storm against Villa in the return fixture and really turned on the style. And then a good win at Bournemouth, who I think had only lost once at home this season, and gave Arsenal a really good game as well. So actually, yeah, as an Arsenal fan, I'm feeling pretty bullish going into this fixture, which I certainly wasn't expecting to when Dominic Szoboszlai's free kick hit the net in the reverse fixture in August. And, you know, Liverpool obviously went solid favourites for the title then, but a lot has happened since then. And just looking at the betting, actually, I think Arsenal -1 on the handicap looks a decent price. You know, they've covered that handicap in 10 of their 15 home games in all competitions. And that includes Champions League games against Atletico Madrid and Bayern Munich. And, you know, usually you say, well, that forms against weaker teams and we can dismiss it for a game like this. But, you know, Liverpool are not playing like certainly not title contenders, maybe not even a top four team at the moment. You know, quite conceded late on at Fulham, but they'd have been very fortunate to have got 3 points there. And I think, you know, given their vulnerability defending set pieces as well, I think Arsenal can win this cosily.
Okay, well, as far as the match odds are concerned, Arsenal 8-13 to claim the victory. It's 31-10 the draw, and Liverpool 4-1. Which I suppose, if you'd have said, as Milt said there, Dan, back in that game at Anfield earlier in the season when Szoboszlai got the winner, that Liverpool would be as big as 4-1 at the Emirates, you know, eyebrows would have been raised. But I think James has got every reason to feel bullish, bearing in mind how Liverpool have performed, certainly in the last couple of games.
I agree, not just in the last couple of games as well. I mean, if you look at the size of the clubs, and you just mentioned those odds, 8-13 Arsenal, 4-1 Liverpool, there's an immediate reaction to, oh, you know, two big clubs going head-to-head, 4-1 looks an attractive price. But it's not. You just got to look at the reality of the situation. We're over halfway through the season. Arsenal, you know, well clear Liverpool in the league. The goal difference is, it often tells a story. Arsenal's is +26, Liverpool's is +4. Goals conceded, Arsenal conceded 14, Liverpool 28, double the amount. And at the moment, Arsenal's squad, as James rightly mentioned, is probably as strong now as it's been at any stage of the season. They've gone through quite a few dodgy periods in terms of player availability, whether it would be attacking players and defenders being out. And they're looking pretty, you know, very, very strong now. And the bench is absolutely stacked at the moment. Well, you know, for the game at Bournemouth, where they showed a great reaction, had that disastrous moment conceding the early goal, come back really strong, won the game. And Liverpool, their squad, I would say, is probably almost as weak as it's been at this, you know, certainly offensively at this stage of the season. You've got Ekitike looks like he's going to be out. No Isak, no Salah, you know, very, very limited attacking options. You've had the disappointment of the draw at home to Leeds and then conceding that, you know, last gasp equaliser against Fulham. And they're not a team, as I mentioned, with the 28 goals conceded that you can fancy to go to Arsenal and keep it that tight. And Arsenal, what I would say as well, James mentioned the games where they've scraped wins over lesser teams. Well, against the big teams at home, they really do raise it, don't they? I mean, you know, Arsenal-Spurs always a massive match. They raised it. The Bayern Munich match, they raised it, won well. Aston Villa recently really raised it and won well. So they rise to the occasion for these big games. And I just think, I think the 8 to 13 is fine if you want to just, you know, back them or stick them in an acca. But I'm going to go with Arsenal and under 3.5 goals because I just think that Liverpool are going to go there, try and stay in the game for as long as they can with a lack of attacking options that they got. But Arsenal will be too strong in the end.
Okay, well, both Dan and James in favour of the league leaders. And it would then, of course, be, well, 24 hours earlier, a big ask for Manchester City to once again keep on their coattails as things stand at the moment. City dropping points late on against Chelsea and what could be a significant result at the Etihad on Sunday. As I say, a 7:30 kickoff on Wednesday night for Manchester City against Brighton. As far as the prices are concerned, well, City 4-11, Brighton 13-2, and the draw 17-4. I can only think, Dan, that Pep Guardiola and his team will be kicking themselves that they let that opportunity against Chelsea go when really they should have been out of sight early doors.
Definitely. And the issue is it's whether it's just going to be those 2 points drop following on from the 2 points they were frustrated to drop at Sunderland, is whether that's going to then impact on the game after. So you can often hold that sense of frustration and it can affect you in the next game. You know, quite a short turnaround as well. It's not going to help them to clear their heads. They lost a couple of big injuries as well that could probably contributed to Chelsea's strong finish and the equaliser, losing Guardiola and Diaz as well. You know, so they've got issues there right at the heart of their defence. And that price you mentioned, that 4-11 City, given the, you know, the last couple of results and the injuries and the mental side of dropping those points, that would really worry me to be piling into them at 4-11. I'm going to go the opposite. I think Brighton are very dangerous opponents. Brighton will draw a double chance, 2-1. They've already beaten City this season. As James mentioned earlier, they ran Arsenal, gave Arsenal a bit of a scare, didn't they? Not so long ago. I think they'll certainly have a better chance of going to City, you know, and getting a result. And I think 2-1 to get something is a good enough price.
It's certainly an argument to be made, Milts, that Brighton do raise their game for the bigger teams and do perform better against those sides that are probably above them in the table.
I think so. I think we've spoken before this season, haven't we, about, you know, being wary of backing Brighton in those games when they're going off at short prices against teams who are out to frustrate them. And, you know, two of them had home and away draws against West Ham recently and had to come from behind in both of those as well. I think City are going to respond positively. You know, you mentioned, Warren, they could have been out of sight at half-time there. You know, Haaland was denied by a great save, hit the inside of the post as well. And I think they can just grind it out. I'd certainly take Dan's point about Brighton. And yeah, you're far better off backing them in games like this. But just looking at their results this season, I think maybe their reputation's a little bit misleading in these kind of fixtures. You know, lost at Arsenal, lost at Liverpool recently, really poor at Manchester United when I expected them to go there and probably win. And they lost 4-2. And their only really kind of big win on the road was at Chelsea where they were trailing 1-0 and kind of not really in the game until Trevor Chalobah was sent off. So I'm not entirely convinced by City, but I'm not entirely convinced by Brighton's underdog potential either. So I'm going to go for a City win and under 3.5 goals. I think they are going to have to grind it out. But, you know, before those last two draws, they've been on a really good winning run. And I think they're not going to make it easy for Arsenal.
Well, match three on the list is a West London derby at Craven Cottage, also at 7:30 on Wednesday evening. It's Fulham against Chelsea. As far as the prices are concerned for this, will Fulham 9-4 to claim the victory here? Chelsea 23-20 and the draw 13-5. Hard to know whether Liam Rossini will be in charge or not for this game. I would imagine that probably wouldn't be. He would probably be watching on from the stands if, as expected, he's given the role. But Milts, just talk a little bit about Fulham as well, because, you know, a lot will have been made that Liverpool conceded that late equaliser. But I have to say, I was really impressed by Fulham again. I thought they played some really good stuff going forward, especially as they're missing key players at the moment as well. And Marco Silva, the job that he's done, I would say, especially over the last couple of months when they look like slipping into a relegation battle, is pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. We spoke at the top of the show about, you know, how Ruben Amorim was struggling without his AFCON absentees. And Marco Silva, you know, missing Alex Iwobi, Calvin Bassey, who's the first choice centre-back, and Samuel Chukwueze, who'd also been really impressive. And yet Fulham are going strong. And I was thinking along the same lines as you a couple of months ago. I thought they could get dragged into it. Really impressive. Only 3 defeats in 11 since the start of November. One of those was that ridiculous 5-4 against Manchester City. Another, they conceded very late on at home to Palace. And yeah, I think this is a tricky betting heap. But at the prices, I'm happy to take Fulham, draw no bet. You know, I think that City game will have taken a bit out of Chelsea. As you say, still a bit of uncertainty who's going to be in the dugout for them. And just looking at the reverse fixture as well earlier in the season, you know, Chelsea won 2-0 at Stamford Bridge, but Fulham had a Josh King goal, very controversially disallowed when it was 0-0. And yeah, I think Fulham will be really up for this game. And I think they could make life difficult for Chelsea.
Big game for Chelsea, Dan. All of a sudden, you know, they're wanting to impress a new manager. They've got that last gasp equaliser at Manchester City. Can they build on that?
I think they can, yeah. You wonder as well with the players that, you know, how many of them were fully behind Maresca. There was the Cole Palmer situation. He never seemed to be, you know, finishing a game. He suddenly plays 90 minutes, you know, in the game at Manchester City. And sometimes it's not about how you get a result, it's that you get a result. To get that late draw at City, having been so shaky in the first half, it's going to give them a massive boost, I feel. Did it without Caicedo as well, suspended. So he's going to come in and really boost that midfield. I think he's a massive player for Chelsea. Fulham, I've been impressed by them, but they've done a high-intensity game against Liverpool, and you've got to play Chelsea at home 3 days later. A lot of the same players are going to have to go again. As I said, Chelsea with that team, certainly at least refreshed by Caicedo coming in. They've got other players on the bench that could come in and start and refresh it, and the standard not really dropped too much. So I just think, you know, odds against, given what I've just said, I'm prepared to take that for Chelsea to win.
Okay, well, up next, we're going to stay in the capital and we're going to head to South London because Crystal Palace will entertain Aston Villa. Also on Wednesday, this one is a 8 o'clock kickoff, and I can tell you that Palace are around about 21-10 to claim the victory here. The draw 23-10, and 13-10 Villa, who of course bounced back from that Arsenal mauling with a really good home victory last time out. Dan, they're 6 points behind still, Aston Villa, and I know pretty much everybody thinks don't talk about the title because they're not going to get there in terms of catching Arsenal, but they just keep on going on their merry way. And you know, it might be quite a good time to play Crystal Palace, would you suggest?
Definitely, yeah. No, they're not going to get there for the title. But I just think that there's still a long, long way to go. And you've still got Europe as well. And at the moment, their squad hasn't really been badly impacted by injuries. It probably will happen at some point. I just feel, but at the moment, they're in certainly in a fantastic position. I think that win over Forest, I would look at it as their most important win of the season. Now, this sounds strange, but when you've gone into such a big game, gone to Chelsea and won, going a massive game at Arsenal, all the expectation, and then get battered in the second half, to not have many days to recover and then have a home game against Forest. I thought that was a big banana skin, but to come back and win it was a huge result. And I think they can kind of, certainly in the short term, kick on from that. As you mentioned there, Warren, it's a great time to play Palace. They've got quite a small squad that has been made really threadbare. I think they've got about 11 players out at the moment. Klein and Lerma were added to the injury list, I think, in the 2-0 loss away to Newcastle, which I wasn't surprised by that result. I'm sure Palace will come again when they get a few players fit, you know, moving more into the year. But at the moment, they're a team to take on. And, you know, those odds against Villa, you know, given the, you know, unbelievable. I can't remember how many games they won in a row before the Arsenal game, but they're back to winning ways again, and they'll get another win at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, Palace, tough times at the moment, Milts. It's a slippery slope, and you can't help but think that everything that's been kind of going on behind the scenes, question marks on Mark Gaye and on Oliver Glasner's future, has kind of had an impact.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's the price you pay for having such a great season, isn't it? Last season, obviously, they lost Eze in the summer. But yeah, you know, your manager's done a brilliant job. You've got some terrific players. You know, Adam Wharton's being linked with Real Madrid. And this is the reality for Palace, unfortunately. You know, and then you factor in the injuries. And also, I think for this game particularly, Ismaïla Sarr is still away at the Africa Cup of Nations. He's absolutely terrorised Aston Villa in recent meetings, scored 6 goals in their last 4 games against Villa, including the FA Cup semi-final, of course. And so Villa will be very relieved not to see him. And yeah, I'm like Dan, I'm really sweet on Villa's chances here. You know, they've won 18 of their last 21 in all competitions. And yeah, echo Dan's words about the importance of that Forest game. You know, I think that was really, really outstanding response. And I expect them to win at Selhurst Park again. You know, Palace really struggling at home. Only won twice in the league on their own patch this term. And Villa just have so many informed forwards and really classy midfield. I think they're so much stronger when Tielemans and Kamara are in central midfield. Kamara was suspended for the away game at Arsenal. I think with them back in there, I think they'll take 3 points at Selhurst Park.
Okay, it is an archetypal 6-pointer up next on the list for us, because it is West Ham against Nottingham Forest at the London Stadium on Tuesday evening. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff, this one. The Hammers 11-5, Nottingham Forest 5-4, and the draw 12-5. I mean, West Ham have missed some really good opportunities over the last couple of weeks in terms of fixtures, Milts. You just feel like, you know, the game at home where they felt that, you know, they could have potentially got a big win there to ease their worries a little bit. Then they go to Wolves and lose off the back of it. I mean, this looks like a vital game for Nuno's men.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, looking at it, I was initially keen on Forest, but looking at the prices, I can't really have them at 5-4. As you say, Nuno under huge pressure, and West Ham likewise after that shocking defeat at Wolves. I think there has to be a response from them. And actually looking at their efforts, you know, the previous 10 games before the defeat at Wolves, been some pretty decent performances, you know, home wins over Newcastle and Burnley, let slip leads at Bournemouth, and then twice against Brighton. You know, it's been fine margins, conceded late in a 1-0 defeat to Fulham. And they were leading against Villa, who, as we've said, are going great guns, leading them at half-time before Morgan Rodgers turned the game on its head. So I feel like West Ham can get something from this game. They need to, but I think it will only be 1 point. I think Forest are going to be set up to frustrate them and maybe hit them on the counter-attack. Now, Sean Dyche has been lamenting the individual errors that are costing his side. And I think that's quite a fair assessment. I think overall, yeah, Forest are a superior team, but at the prices, I don't like them to take maximum points in this one.
Yeah, if you'd have said about a month ago, Dan, about Forest, I think everybody thought they'll drag themselves clear. There's no way they're going to get relegated. Things haven't quite gone according to plan over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, less than that, probably about 2 weeks, isn't it? They've had this 4-game losing run. I think this is a minefield for looking to back either side. I think if I had to back one of the two teams to win, I'd be more comfortable backing West Ham at 11-5 than Forest at 5-4. But I'm going to go with a draw. I just think whoever scores the first goal is going to be absolutely massive. The West Ham fans are going to be sort of teetering on whether to go after the owners or to get behind the team, because it's just a massive game for the club as well. And a lot of that, I think, will depend on who scores the first goal, how that support from the stands is going to go. And that's crucial, really, there, because when the crowd get up, you see them in home games, even against Brighton recently, when the crowd get up, it transfers itself to the players, and West Ham start to play a lot better. But I just think, it's a huge game as well for West Ham. You look at the gap to Forest. I agree with James, but Forest have got a much better team and a better squad, and they're already 4 points behind them at the moment. And then you look at who else they can catch. They're already 8 points behind Leeds, who are really strong at home. They're 9 points behind Bournemouth, who are going to have Semenyo money to reinvest. They're in a real tough situation. They need to really try and win this game, West Ham, but look, they've just stunk the place out with a 3-0 loss away to Wolves, and I can't, even though I'll be more comfortable backing them than Forest, I'm even more comfortable just going for the draw.
Well, five more games left to go as we preview the forthcoming Premier League action. And up next, it's a trip to St James's Park at 8:15 kickoff on Wednesday for Newcastle against Leeds. Newcastle 4-6 here to claim the victory. Leeds are around 17-4 and the draw 14-5. Dan, I remember the reverse fixture at Elland Road was an absolute horrible game. It was, I think, really it was 0-0, wasn't it? It was barely any chances between the two sides. But you have to say, going into this game, although Newcastle got that good win at the weekend, Leeds are the team in form.
Yeah, and I think the match result prices are about right, actually, here. I think Leeds are 7 games without a win, but Newcastle is so strong at St James's Park, such a tough team to play against there. And they've hit a bit of form as well, haven't they? 2 wins, finally got into the top half. Feels like they've been trying to do that for most of the season. And so given that I think the match result price, I hear what you're saying about the reverse fixture, but I think Newcastle tend to score goals at home. Leeds have scored in 9 of their last 10 matches. You know, the 0-0 draw at Liverpool was the exception rather than the rule. So they're creating chances, playing with confidence and scoring goals. And I think Newcastle more likely to win, but reflected by the price, I just think it'll be a decent game, this one. And I'm going to go with both teams to score at a shade of odds on.
Yeah, we have to give massive credit to Leeds, Milt, with how they've done over the last sort of 6 to 8 weeks, because at one stage there, I think quite a lot, even the Leeds fans were thinking that they were staring relegation in the face. But performances have been excellent over the last few weeks, and this is going to be another test for them.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we talk so much about managers being under pressure and doing rubbish jobs. You've got to give Daniel Farke some credit, given that they were apparently kind of plotting to sack him immediately after winning promotion. And, you know, he was in real trouble earlier in the season. Switch to the back three, and it's worked wonders for them. So, I certainly expect them to be competitive at St James's Park. Having said that, Newcastle are strong at home. But yeah, I think under 2.5 goals is the way to go here. So hopefully for Dan's selection as well, we get a 1-1 draw, and that'll do us nicely. Newcastle, solid at home. Not really hammering teams. They've won 6 league games, all of them by 2-1, 2-0 or 1-0 margins. As we've seen, Leeds have shown some real spirit and real defensive solidity. You know, do most of their scoring at Elland Road. Last 3 away results were 1-1s at Brentford and Sunderland, and then the 0-0 draw at Liverpool. So I think this could be a tight, cagey, low-scoring one, hopefully with a little bit more quality than the reverse fixture.
It's to Turf Moor next for another 8:15 kickoff on Wednesday. Burnley, Manchester United. We understand that Darren Fletcher will be in interim charge of United following Ruben Amorim's dismissal. Burnley 15-4 to claim the win here. It's 3-1 the draw and 7-10 Manchester United. We've talked a lot about United so far and the managerial change, Milts. Just a quick word on Burnley going into this game. We've said it how many times this season, they hang on in there. You know, they're in games for long periods. Just can't quite get the goals, I think, more than anything when they need them at times. Are we now thinking it's a forlorn hope for Scott Parker?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he sounds really down in the dumps, doesn't he, about the injury problems. And I think they've got 3 players away at AFCON as well. And, you know, given the squad that they came up with and the, you know, the relative lack of goals that they scored in the Championship, it was always going to be a struggle. And I think probably the bare score lines are a little bit misleading because they have been outplayed so much on XG. You know, they've got that late equaliser at Bournemouth, and that was their only shot on target. Well beaten by Brighton at the weekend. No real attacking threat. I think they are going to end up bottom of the table given Wolves' recent performances. You know, that gap's only down to 6 points now. I think Wolves could certainly overhaul them in the battle for the the wooden spoon. From a betting perspective, obviously the Amarim decision makes this a tricky one for punters. I was looking at Mateus Cunha to be first goal scorer. You know, he's obviously shouldering more responsibility while Mbeumo is away at AFCON, and scored three goals in his last five games. In his last six, actually, he's had 30 shots. And I'd expect him to have a good second half of the season. Just looking at his record at Wolves, actually, 27 goals in 58 Premier League starts, which is a terrific, terrific strike rate. So I think United have got a player there, and I think he could shine at Turf Moor amidst a bit of gloom in both camps.
Yeah, I mean, I covered the reverse fixture in the season. It was a real humdinger down, and it was an injury time penalty which got Manchester United all 3 points. Potentially not expecting as many goals this time around, do we think?
No, I'm gonna actually back Burnley to get a point here. I think the draw is overpriced at 3-1. Mm-hmm. That United bench, you can see why Amorim was getting frustrated. I mean, his bench at Leeds was horribly inexperienced, wasn't it? You only felt that he could use one sub. He brought Xerxes on. Dorgu was having to start and playing in like an attacking role. And it didn't look... there weren't many, you know, options, to be fair, to Amorim, and that's not going to change for Fletcher, who's going to be in charge, you know, for this game. He's going to have the same problems there. And so then you look at it and you think, well, can Burnley take advantage of that and maybe get a win? They need wins, don't they? They've not had a win in 11, but they've been poor for a while. 11 games without a win. How on earth do you close? You're looking at a six-point gap between them and Forest. I mentioned the gap to the bigger gap to the teams higher than that. How can you see Burnley, given the form that they're on, getting more than 6 points, more than Forest over the rest of the season? I can't see it. I think they're absolutely doomed. But I think given the United's problems at the moment and the threadbare squad that they've got, you know, the draw with Wolves, the draw away to Leeds, away to Burnley's not an easy fixture. I think it could be another draw.
OK, next up on the list, it's Bournemouth against Tottenham at the Vitality Stadium. A 7:30 kick-off this one. Between these two teams, I can tell you that Bournemouth are 21-20 to claim the victory here. The draw is 13-5 and it's 12-5 Spurs. Dan, we'll start with you with this one. 1-1 draw for Tottenham last time out against Sunderland when they'd been in front, got the noses in front there, and arguably more pressure piled on Thomas Frank. What did you make of that performance, and where are Spurs at the moment?
How long you got, Warren? they're seriously hard watch Spurs at the moment. Let's just say it was an improvement on the Brentford performance when it looked like they just went for a point and just played for a point, got a point at Brentford. And then, you know, at home to Sunderland, they did actually try and win the game, but to cut a long story short, they weren't good enough. They weren't good enough to never really look like getting the second goal. And there's a nervousness and that contributes to the vulnerability. And to be fair to Sunderland, it was a great goal to the equaliser. You've got to give them some credit there. But they're just they look a very average side, I'll be honest, at the moment, Spurs. And it's uninspiring stuff. I think they'll probably be similar to Brentford away, that they'll go to Bournemouth and be happy to maybe nick a draw. And Bournemouth, we don't know if Semenyo is going to, you know, whether he's going to be involved or not. So that's a question mark there. They've not been winning games, have they, for quite, you know, had a long run of games without winning. So, and I'm looking at there, although they had the exciting game against Arsenal with the 3-2, the previous three home games before that, you've had a lost 1-0 to Everton, 0-0 against Chelsea, 1-1 against Burnley. So they're not exactly at home. It's not been that free-flowing. So where I'm going here, with the way that Spurs are so stodgy, especially away from home, Bournemouth not scoring lots of goals at home, going to go with under 2.5 on the goals odds against.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously spoken there about Tottenham, James, but Bournemouth themselves in a real slippery slope at the moment. Semenyo is going to be heading to Manchester City by the looks of things. They're going to have to try and plan for the future. Though, I suppose the one good thing in terms of that for the Cherries is the fact that they're not going to go down by the looks of things now, barring an absolute nightmare end to the season. So they can plan a little bit more for the future, and they can try and, as Dan mentioned earlier, bring in a couple of new players in January.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, given their efforts in the transfer market in the past couple of years, you know, you'd fancy them to unearth a few more gems, wouldn't you? You know, they rebuilt their entire defence after selling them for an absolute fortune in the summer. you know, Croupy looks an unbelievable finisher. I think he's 18 or 19. So, you know, if you're a Bournemouth fan, I think you've got to have faith that the Semenyo money is going to be used wisely. I'm going to try and summon up as much enthusiasm as Charlesy for this game. I could tell he's really looking forward to watching Spurs. I, like he said, you know, Bournemouth's home games before the Arsenal match have been really dour. And I think Marcus Tavernier looks a good price to score at any time in this one. You know, started as nominally a defensive midfielder against Arsenal, but he popped up, you know, some brilliant runs into the box, ended up having four shots. I think he scored three goals at home already this season. I think he's a standout bit of value in the goal scorer market.
Okay, two more games left to go, and the first venue is the GTEC Community Stadium for Brentford Sunderland on Wednesday evening, a 7:30 kickoff. And I was talking to a Brentford fan the other day, and he was just sort of saying about at this stage of the season, I don't think they could have hoped to be anywhere near where they are at the moment. Keith Andrews, of course, was being talked about as potentially the first manager to lose his job this season, Milton. You have to take your hat off to him. The way that he's kind of bounced back, and particularly from what was a pretty sticky start to the season as well, it really has been impressive.
Absolutely. I mean, for both of these clubs, you know, on 30 points, which, looking at the anti-post relegation betting, you would have been absolutely shocked to see this. And yeah, both deserve a huge amount of credit. I remember talking to a Brentford fan, I think after the first weekend of the season, who told me that Igor Tiago was useless. I'm not feeling quite so bad about maybe getting Brentford wrong myself. But yeah, you know, really impressive. That 4-2 win at Everton, who don't concede many goals. Third victory in four matches. And Tiago, who had a little bit of a slump, helps himself to a hat-trick. So, yeah, I'm expecting another good game here. You know, Brentford's home games, apart from that 0-0 draw with Tottenham, which, you know, Thomas Frank did his best to spoil the entertainment there and succeeded. Mm-hmm. Other than that, Brentford's home games are really high-scoring. I think, as we've seen from Sunderland, you know, they're still finishing games so strongly. Dan mentioned that terrific team goal they scored in the last 10 minutes at Tottenham. And yeah, I think both teams to score is a good bet between these two sides. Really, really confident.
Yeah, I mean, quite rightly, Milts praises Sunderland for the season so far, Dan. But particularly, I have to say, in the last month or so, I mean, everybody flagged this up at the start of the season. They were losing a considerable number of players, more than anybody else, to AFCON. And yet, there hasn't really been much of a drop-off, in all honesty.
Four draws, bro. The Brighton game, the Leeds, Leeds were bang on top second half there. Then Man City and the Spurs game, you know, both probably deserved draws, those two. And incredible, really, when you look at the players that they've been missing. And they've had an injury to Ballard in the middle of that as well. He's been their absolute defensive kingpin. So a lot of credit to the manager. I think he's done a fantastic job. I think he's tactically so astute, somebody that, you know, like unlike Amorim, who's just wedded to he's able to adapt, you know, lose players and still get the best out of almost a completely different group, you know, with six gone to the AFCON. He's done a fantastic job. And I think they can pick another draw up here. I think Brentford, they fantastic season, but they do better, I think, when teams come onto them. A lot of these, even at home games, they've done well against big teams that have attacked them and come onto them. Everton tried to come onto them as well, and they're very dangerous on the counter attack. They've still got pace on the counter despite losing, you know, Mbeumo in the summer. They still carry that counter attacking threat. But I think when the team like Spurs did recently, just sit in and time waste and play for the draw, they didn't create many chances and struggle to break teams down. So I think that could be the similar case here. I think that makes the draw overpriced. Going to go with the draw.
Just to run you through the prices, by the way, Brentford 4-5 to win the game, 7-2 Sunderland, and 13-5 the draw. And we're going to conclude with Everton against Wolves at the Hill Dickinson Stadium. Another 7:30 kickoff is on Wednesday. Everton 3-4, Wolves 4-1, and the draw 5-2 here. And let's give Rob Edwards some credit, because there's even been talk over the last couple of weeks, Dan, that he was going to lose his job potentially before the end of the season. But, you know, there's been some decent signs over the last couple of weeks. They only lost by the odd goal at Liverpool and Arsenal, and then they got that win over West Ham, which I'm sure will have released a lot of pressure from Molyneux.
Yeah, I mean, they've improved, and they probably also, it always helps when you're playing teams at the right time as well. When they played Man United, I mentioned the players they were missing. West Ham in that game without Pacatoes, I think, is a really big player for them. So it's probably a good, and West Ham had their two first choice AFCON fullbacks missing as well. So they've played them at the right times, but they've got the results, played well. And that's going to, when you're on such a losing run, any side, and you suddenly pick up a win, it does have a massive, massive impact just on the confidence levels of the players. And you do feel you can go and win again. And I'm going to back them to do that. I think that 4-1 looks overpriced here. I think they're meeting Everton at a good time as well. Everton, to me, they've got a bit of a lack of depth in their squad. I mentioned about earlier in the season when they made changes for the League Cup tie away to Wolves and lost. I think now they've only got about six out, but it feels like a lot more. You know, quite a poor performance against Brentford with a 4-2 defeat. Dewsbury Hall, I think, is a massive miss for them. They've got the two AFCON players missing as well still. And I just think Wolves, with that confidence they've got now, they've got to try and win games, haven't they? I mean, everyone's saying that they're down, but there's no point in going. If it's 15 minutes to go and it's level, they're not going to just sit on a draw. They're going to try and win the game. So bearing that in mind, I think 4-1 Wolves to win is a big enough price.
I think it's fair to say it's been a strange whole season for Everton. But there's been some highs. You know, they moved to the new stadium and it's not quite been the nightmare that some thought it might be, having left Goodison Park, which had been a bit of a fortress in recent times. But then, you know, some of the games, and especially at home recently, I mean, the 4-2 defeat against Brentford would have probably sent shudders through David Moyes.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, I think Dan's spot on about their squad. You know, I think it was quite late in the summer transfer window, and Moyes was still saying he needed five or six new players. Yeah. And they did actually get busy then and brought in a few players. But you know, as Dan said, they're missing some really key players now. And yeah, the squad does look exposed. And yeah, I'd be quite keen on Wolves or draw double chance in this one. I think, you know, looking at Everton's season as a whole, probably where they should be, really, given, you know, they're pretty poor over the past two, three seasons. Then moving to the new stadium, all the uncertainty that brings. Yeah, I think it would have been a lot to ask for David Moyes to you know, lead them to sort of top eight or something like that. So they are where they are, and yeah, I think you know, certainly not the most appealing odds-on shot of the week against a Wolves side who, as we mentioned, you know, I'm saying this with gritted teeth because I've actually had a little nibble on Wolves to break the infamous Derby record, and I've given up on that now. I felt the writing was probably on the wall, you know, just how well they did play in those defeats at Arsenal and Liverpool, and then obviously picked up the pointer against Manchester United, and then, you know, really kind of cathartic victory over West Ham at the weekend. And yeah, I think they can get another positive result here.
Okay, well, that wraps up all of the midweek Premier League action. Promises to be another cracking few days of games. Up next, it's your FPL update. So it's FPL time now, and Tom Hill joins us again to give his suggestions of who to select for your fantasy team this week.
After a mammoth few weeks in the FPL world, we have a break on the horizon as game week 21 is the last round of matches before the Premier League comes to a halt for the third round of the FA Cup. There's been so much to take in over the last few weeks, but the next few days will give us all a chance to make ground in our mini leagues. We have one game taking place on Tuesday, eight on Wednesday, and the best has been left until last as Arsenal host Liverpool on Thursday. Our defender for game week 21 is Everton's James Tarkowski, priced at 5.6 million. The Toffees had a day to forget as they lost 4-2 to Brentford on Sunday. However, the powerful defender had a header cleared off the line and still managed to score 2 points due to his defensive contribution efforts. He's now scored 26 points from DEFCON this season as David Moyes' side face Wolves this weekend. The old gold are improving, but they have still only scored 4 away goals this season. At the very least, Tarkowski looks like he can land more DEFCON points, and Everton have the highest chance of keeping a clean sheet according to the odds. Despite the sacking of Ruben Amorim, Manchester United's Matheus Cunha makes the shortlist at £8.2 million. The former Wolves man has scored 9 points in 2 of his last 4, and he has scored at least 5 in 4 of his last 6. United have only lost 1 of their last 7 on the road, and Cunha is playing in an advanced role, and he should do more damage against Burnley. The Clarets are winless in 6 and have conceded 2 or more goals in 4 of those encounters, so this looks a great chance for Cunha to add to his tally for the campaign. It's time to strike while the iron is hot for our forward in game week 21, and Thiago looks the best option as he faces Sunderland. The Brentford ace, who is priced at £6.9 million, scored a hat-trick against Everton at the weekend, and he faces a Sunderland side that are winless in 5 on their travels. He has got 108 points to his name after his 17-point haul, and with 4 double-digit returns already, he can do the business on home soil this weekend. There's doubts regarding Hugo Ekitike. Erling Haaland has blanked recently, so Thiago offers a great spot in our forward line ahead of the game week this coming Wednesday.
Big thanks to Tom then for his input on the FPL slot. We're going to turn our attentions to the EFL now and look at this midway stage of the season at the best outright bets. And well, Dan, before we get your best bets in terms of the outright selections for the remainder of the season, just a quick word on what's going on at the top of the Championship, because we've seen Coventry look absolutely streets clear. But how many times have we seen this before where you hit a bit of a bumpy patch, particularly over the Christmas and New Year period, and you can start to get reeled in? And that's looking like the case at the moment.
Absolutely. And what it shows is what an amazing job they did earlier in the season. The Championship is such a competitive league, as we've seen with the struggles of the three teams that have come down. And it's probably more as competitive as ever. And Coventry, to put the points on the board that they have in that early part of the season was unbelievable. But they have 2 wins now from the last 8 games, Coventry. No win in the last 3. And they do. I think I can see them getting caught, actually. Maybe they'll hang on for a top two finish. But for the title, I mean, there's still shade of odds on to win the title. 20 games to go. I don't think I'll be piling into that. I'm not sure who will catch them. I think Ipswich are 8 points off, but coming like a train at the moment, got a game in hand. Middlesbrough only 6 points off, played the same games. They're 9-1. I mean, that looks quite a big price. But given that I'm not sure who I'll back to overtake Coventry, I've not picked a bet out for this one. But I just think I'll put it out there. Coventry odds on. I won't be backing them at odds on to finish top.
The irony wouldn't be lost on Middlesbrough fans if Wolves finish bottom with Rob Edwards and they end up winning the Championship title, I'm sure. But that's the top end of the Championship. I think your outright tip, though, is towards the bottom end of the Championship table. Dan, what we're looking at here?
I'm going to go with Blackburn to be relegated. 13-2, I thought that looked a big price. I think it's, obviously, with the obvious exception of Sheffield Wednesday, I think it's quite competitive, the relegation battle down at the bottom of the Championship, and more competitive than the odds are suggesting. I mean, Oxford are 2-5 to go down. They're only 3 points inside the relegation zone. They're still a competitive side. I know Gary Rowett's recently gone, but they've not got a squad that's out of their depth, certainly in the division. Portsmouth are 10-11 to go down there. They'll probably do some business. Got a load of injuries at the moment. They'll do some business. They're generally strong at home. Already got 5 home wins. Mm. I think they're too short as well. And Norwich are 6-4 to go down, considering the improvement they've had under Clement. Yeah. Although they're in the relegation zone at the moment, I feel they'll get out of it. So that somebody's got to drop in if some of these teams are going to get out. And I look at Blackburn, who are only 4 points outside the relegation zone, not got a massive squad, as we've kind of seen over this festive period where they've got injuries and haven't won any of the 4 games. Come from behind, got a 2-2 draw at home to Charlton recently. One of them 4 games was away to Sheffield Wednesday when they didn't even win that game. So for me, Blackburn, and the fact that they've got so much pressure on their away form, they've only had 2 home wins. I mean, if you don't sort that, Blackburn don't sort that home form out, then they're going to be under massive threat, and certainly more threat than odds of 13-2 to go down would suggest.
Okay, well, let's switch our attentions now to League One. And although Cardiff were probably by many people expected to be there or thereabouts, having been relegated last season, there's quite a few surprise names at the top end of the League One table. And one of those teams, Dan, is your tip to go up?
Yeah, I'm going to start off with Cardiff. I think they're top already. They've recovered from their relegation, play some great football, got lots of attacking players, not just starting, but to come off the bench. I think they will win the league. So let's get that out there first. But I think joining them in the automatics, I think probably will be Lincoln, who are second at the moment. They're odds against to go up. And if, so if you think they're going to be in the top two and you've still got a possibility, safety net of the playoffs and going up that way, odds against, I think, is a good bet. I mean, they played Cardiff recently, beat Cardiff 2-1 at home, won 2-1 recently away to Stockport. So the last eight games, they've had 6 wins and 2 draws. I just mentioned how difficult a couple of those games were. And they seem to be getting stronger as the season goes on. You look at the competition for that top two. Bradford are third at the moment. They've lost 2 of their last 5 games. They're having a little bit of a dip. One of them was a real alarming 3-0 loss away to Mansfield. And Bolton, who the markets love Bolton. They're a possession-based team. Had a lot of unlucky results, it looked like, in the early part of the season. But they're odds on to go up. And there's quite a gap between them and Lincoln. I think it's about 8 points. And that's their recent form as well. I'm looking at their last 3 games. They've lost home to Mansfield 1-0, drew 1-1 away to Doncaster, where apparently Doncaster are unlucky not to win. Even the Bolton manager, Schumacher, said so. And then drew 0-0 at home to Northampton. Didn't look like from the highlights. There was very few Bolton chances in that game. So they've had quite a dip the last few games, and they're not playing like a team that, given the gap to them and Lincoln, should be odds on to go up. So given all that, Lincoln's odds to go up, odds against looks good to me. At the other end of the table, Burton to be relegated, I think, odds against is a good bet. They're fourth from bottom at the moment, lost 3 on the bounce, lost 2-0 to home to Wigan, 2-0 away to Reading, 3-0 away to Plymouth, who are a relegation rival. We're probably going into the game, you'd have said that Plymouth are moving on up the table now. But it is incredibly tight there, so a lot of teams could get dragged in. But the squad size there, I think, Gary Bowyer there is working with a very small squad at Burton. They're going to need to do some business, certainly. Their best player, Charlie Webster, has been injured since mid-November. They've had a drop-off, certainly, since then. And they're going the wrong way. So I think at 7-5 to go down for Burton. And I'll mention again, some of them teams near the bottom, I think Doncaster could get out of it, and they're quite a short price to go down. I think the teams that are in there, I wouldn't even completely write off Port Vale, who had a really good bit of an upturn recently. And Rotherham are 2-5 to go down. They're going to probably do some business in January. I wouldn't say they're dead and buried yet either.
Quick look at League Two as well, then, before we get the Premier League bet builder from Milton. And I think one team outside of the playoff places at the moment, Dan, that you fancy to go up in League Two.
Yeah, going to go with Colchester to 5-1 to be promoted. They're 4 points outside the playoffs at the moment. Only lost, though, 2 of their last 14 matches. Last season, they kind of finished strong and just missed out on the playoffs. They're probably going to finish strong again, but they're 9 points better off right now than they were at the same stage of last season. So they're in a better position to get into the playoffs, and they might even get in the top 3. There's only a 7-point gap. I really like them offensively. Got some real good Harry Anderson, Micah and Bick on loan from Charlton. They'll be open to keep him, that's for sure. Corey Slisby, they've got some great attacking players, and I think they'll finish strong. And to cut a long story short, 5-1 for them to go up looks a nice price.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick word, I think you fancy Crawley might get relegated and dragged into that bottom two.
Yeah, I think the battle to avoid the draw, I think it's 2 from 4. I think Bristol Rovers, with Steve Evans going in there, already had a bit of an upswing, 1-3-0 in a key going away to Shrewsbury. I think they'll get out. So I think it's 2 from 4. You've got Harrogate and Newport at the moment on 17 points, Crawley and Shrewsbury on 19 points. So it's, for me, it's really tight, as the points would suggest. But Newport are 4-9 to go down. Harrogate are 1-4. They're both way too short. Newport have improved under Fuchs since he's gone in there. Harrogate have got a lot of players back recently. So I think while they've been on a 14-game winless run, I think with the players they've had coming back, I think they could improve in the weeks ahead. And that could drag in one of the other two. Crawley, to me, they're on a terrible run. No running, winning 10. Lost 3-0 away to Cheltenham in their last match. And 7-2 in a heat that's more competitive, I think, than the prices suggest, is a good price.
Okay, well, big thanks to Dan for his EFL outright best bets. We're going to switch our attentions now back to the Premier League, and we'll look at James's bet builder, which I think is coming from the big one, James, Arsenal against Liverpool.
Yeah, that's right, Warren. Yeah, I'm going to kick it off with Arsenal to be leading at half-time. Obviously, their last 2 wins against Villa and Bournemouth, they were level at the break. I'm expecting a fast start from Mikel Arteta's men in this game. Arsenal have been leading at half-time in 7 of their 10 home league matches this season, and they play 15 games at the Emirates Stadium, and only Manchester City and Bayern Munich have managed to score a first half goal against them. So we've mentioned Liverpool's attacking absentees. I think Arsenal can take charge of this game early on. And the second leg is Bukayo Saka to score or assist a goal. Came off the bench against Bournemouth, so he should be fresh. Looked really bright. Set up Declan Rice's second goal there. And three of his four league goals this season have come at the Emirates. And another really bright performance against Brighton just after Christmas when he had seven shots and claimed an assist. So I think he could have a big impact on this game. And the final leg is under 3.5 cards. I think you remember Liverpool's last visit to North London was quite a lively affair against Tottenham, who ended up with nine men. I think they're going to be better behaved in this one. Just looking at Liverpool's three games since then, actually, there's only been five yellow cards shown. And the only one to a Liverpool player was Cody Gakpo for his goal celebration, his premature goal celebration, as it turned out, at Fulham. So I think a low card count looks likely. Arsenal, you know, they have had their disciplinary problems over the years, but really, really impressive record this season, particularly at home. They've only picked up seven cautions in 10 league matches at the Emirates. So I think it could be a quiet night for the officials.
Okay, that's Milton's Premier League bet builder. We're going to go to the assist treble now with a selection from each of us. And just to mark up that we had a 100-30 treble winner last time out on Boxing Day with wins for Bolton, Huddersfield and Accrington Stanley. Let's see if we can repeat the feat this time around. Dan, who are you going with for your selection?
I'm going to go with the Chelsea for the treble. I just think they finished the game very well against Manchester City. You've got Cole Palmer now sort of fully fit and ready to play a key role. Caicedo to come in after suspension. They'll probably freshen it up in a few other areas. Fulham, I think with their squad and the AFCON absentees, have not got the options to freshen it up and it'll be hard for them to go again just 3 days after the 2-2 draw against Liverpool.
Okay, Chelsea for Dan. What about you, James?
Yeah, sorry, Warren, you're sick of me talking about Arsenal, but I'm going for Arsenal at 8-13 to beat Liverpool. You know, Liverpool almost pinched a win at Fulham, but far from impressive, particularly in attack where they're missing so many key players. And you just look at the way they've been defending set pieces this season. You know, Arsenal are going to be licking their lips over that. And I think they're ready to avenge August's 1-0 defeat at Anfield.
Okay, well, my selection is going to be Wolves' double chance at Everton at around about 19-20. We mentioned earlier on, of course, that they've collected 4 points from the last two games. And certainly talking to some Wolves fans recently, they feel they've been performing better away from home in the last couple of months. Like we said, lost by the odd goal at Arsenal and Liverpool, drew at Manchester United, and they did beat Everton, of course, in the EFL Cup at Molineux earlier in the season. The Toffees have won just one of the last five games, and this could be something that Wolves build on after that opening victory against West Ham. So the assist treble this week is Arsenal, Chelsea and Wolves double chance. And we'll conclude with the naps of the week from James and Dan. And Dan, we'll start with your nap first.
Yeah, I'm going to take a chance and go Brighton or draw double chance. It's 2-1 at Man City. I think what I didn't mention earlier, they had the last game, they had pretty, you know, comfortable experience, a 2-0 win at home to Burnley. That was a day before City played. So at this stage of the season, to have that extra day to, you know, rest and preparation going into the next game, I think is quite important. City have had a tough game against Chelsea with a real sting in the tail. Not the sort of team you'd normally expect to be feeling tired, but they've also lost two of their two central defenders towards the end of the game as well. So they're not in the best of shape, and I think Brighton are overpriced to get at least a point.
Okay, and tell me Arsenal's not your nap as well, Milts, is it?
go on then, I'll dig out another one. Aston Villa to win at Crystal Palace. I just think it's a great time to be playing Palace, you know, so weary after a really busy schedule, Conference League, EFL Cup. And Villa, you know, we mentioned it earlier in the show, such an impressive response to the defeat at Arsenal. You know, that win against Nottingham Forest, they were good value for it. That was their 12th victory in their last 13 games in all competitions. And Palace really struggling for wins at home.
Okay, well, a big thanks to both James and Dan for their input on this week's assist. Don't forget, of course, to like, subscribe and comment on the Racing Post YouTube channel. And with the FA Cup taking centre stage next week, the assist will be back on Thursday, January the 15th. In the meantime, enjoy your football this week. And as always, please remember to gamble responsibly.